November 1957. Dance Hall of the Damned. The authorities tried to take us orphans away from Uncle Ned many times, but he always fought them off, sometimes even setting the dogs on the rotten shower, as he called them.
"It's no way to bring up those wretched children," scowled the priest when he came to the house one cold night with two big red-faced guards, each brandishing a heavy menacing baton. "You're out all hours of the night with that cursed band of yours. And who's looking after the miserable sods then?"
"I take them with me," said Uncle Ned.
"That's grand then," sneered the priest. "Young children hanging out in those dirty dance halls when they should be at home saying their prayers."
What the priest didn't know is that those were the happiest of times for Breege, Fionnuala, Pat and myself. That is until Ned, a saxophonist by trade, began to play with a band called Johnny and the Limeburners in the late 50s. From that moment on, things were never truly the same again. The members of Uncle Ned's regular band, the Chimney Sweep Men, were most upset when he started to divide his time between them and the Limeburners, a mysterious band that no one had ever heard about before. For he was the most talented sax player to be found in the whole province of Connacht, and indeed far beyond. One of the biggest fears a young struggling Irish band faced in those days was the constant threat of losing a talented musician to a rival band. While it was fairly easy to find a fiddle player in the bogs, or someone to wildly hammer away on the Bowron drum, a sax player was something of an exotic creature, and about as plentiful in the west of Ireland as the elusive and almost extinct corncrake. Uncle Ned, a handsome man, with slick, well-greased jet-black hair, would drive throughout the land in his battered old van from ballroom to ballroom. Since there was no one to look after us parentless children on those weekend nights, Uncle Ned would bring us along for the ride too. But under no condition would he ever allow us into those ballrooms, admonishing us that some of the goings-on inside were not at all fit for our tender young eyes. No, it was our lot to be left outside in the van for a few stark hours. But I do believe it was in those early formative days waiting in that cold van, wondering about those very goings-on inside, that I declared when I grew up that I too would be in a band. And I dreamt that I would be orchestrating from the stage with the power of my music those very goings-on that Uncle Ned only ever hinted about in his roundabout way. Uncle Ned's first gig with the Limeburners was at a ballroom in the village of Clonfad, about 20 miles from our house. It was a strange enough location, for many is the night we'd driven by that little town and never once noticed a ballroom of any kind whatsoever.
"Oh, there's a ballroom there, sure enough," said Uncle Ned. "A very popular one. The Starlight, they call it. People young and old come from miles around to dance their Friday night away."
Friday night came, and a very cold one it was. There was thick fog out and dangerous black frost on the roads. Despite the adverse conditions, Uncle Ned and a lot of us made it safely to the village of Granlahan, after which we took a right turn towards Clonfad, in search of that little-known ballroom. The grip on the road was bad, and we could feel the wheels go from under us from time to time. We'd be heading straight for some walls and bog holes, only for Uncle Ned, now shaking and a bit bothered, to gain control at the last second. Though we feared we'd surely get lost or end up in the side of a ditch on this dark night, in the end we could never have missed it. It was lit up in all its glory, throwing fantastic blasts of light at the two western counties, Galway and Roscommon, which it bordered. In the excitement at reaching our destination, Uncle Ned braked a little too hard and found himself skidding along the icy car park towards another van parked outside the front of the ballroom. The words, "The Limeburners," were emblazoned in fiery orange letters on this slick-looking vehicle. Our four wheels eventually came to a halt, but not before putting a wee dent in that of the Limeburners' piece of machinery.
"Well, feck it," said Uncle Ned. "There goes the first night's wages."
Poor Breege and Fionnuala broke into a terrible fit of laughter, and we all joined in, including Uncle Ned. but as I looked at those burning letters, I couldn't help but feel a shudder of fear too. In the following weeks, Uncle Ned's demeanour changed considerably. Always the jolly sort, he became pale and sullen, and his two eyes, once a happy, vibrant blue, were now dark and troubled. The four of us children wondered if he had taken to the drink, for though many of the elders in our family were fond of the drop, Uncle Ned rarely drank, and only ever in moderation. But we never found evidence of this, and when the girl sneaked into his room one quiet night and checked his whimpering breath while he was in a very deep, if troubled, sleep, the enthralling vapours of whiskey or any other strong spirit could not be detected. Something else was bothering Uncle Ned. One Friday night, while it lashed rain outside and we all waited patiently in the van, my brother Pat decided he would disobey Uncle Ned's strict orders and see if he could somehow slip inside the starlight to see for himself what exactly went on in there. For we were all convinced by now that this godforsaken place was not doing Uncle Ned's health any favours, and the thought of life without our beloved uncle was a frightening scenario for us parentless children. The doorman, shivering with the cold, was trying to light a cigarette against the shelter of a corner wall when Pat sneaked up from behind the lime burner's sinister van, parked as was usual by the ballroom steps. Unnoticed, Pat quickly slid in the door. It was now into the early hours of the morning, and as the rain continued to bucket from the dark heavens, my two sisters had fallen asleep. It was left to me to wait there nervously for Pat to emerge again, hopefully with some solid answers. What those answers might be was something I dared not even imagine. Such was the overall strangeness and eeriness of this place. Despite the fact that innocent young people seemed to flock here every Friday night for a good time, something was not quite right. But I dared not think of these things. Perhaps the lime burner set was longer than Ned had been used to in his previous band. Perhaps Uncle Ned, virtuoso that he was, played to the very limits of his being. Maybe the really fast sax had drained every last piece of air from his lungs and left the poor man exhausted at the end of every night. Yes, perhaps he overdid it, and that's why Uncle Ned looked so bad. But it was a very different picture that an ashen-faced Pat painted when we arrived home that night, after a frail Uncle Ned had already retired to bed. The lime burners, according to Pat, were a miserable old band, and Uncle Ned's exhaustion could not be attributed to an overly frenzied set. Each melancholy old dirge was worse than the next. The starlight ballroom was a depressing old spot, where on one side sat a line of lonely old women, on the other, a line of lonely old men. The lime burners played such a deadbeat that hardly anyone even got up to dance. Pat, who hid in an unlighted corner at the back, was just about to leave when the countenance of their guitar player caught his attention. As pale as a ghost, he now held a clipping of a recent newspaper before me. In the pale moonlight, I could just about make out the text of the news article. It told a sad tale of a renowned travelling musician who went by the name of Bootless Bob. Bootless Bob had been tragically killed in a recent hit-and-run accident. "What has all this to do with Bootless Bob?" I asked. "Don't you see?" said Pat. "Bootless Bob was a guitar player I saw tonight." "But Bootless Bob is dead, Pat." It took a while for Pat's words to sink in, and when they eventually did, they chilled to the bone. "They were all dead, Fergal." "What?" "Everyone at the Starlight was dead. They all had whitewashed faces and black, hollow eyes. Like zombies, Fergal." "Stop saying that, Pat. All were dead. All were dead. No one was from this world, Fergal. The Starlight is a dance hall for the damned." "You're talking pure doolally, Pat. Uncle Ned's not dead. He's as alive as you and me." I cried in bed all that night. I couldn't make sense of this at all. had it taken so long to get back to the van. I'd wanted to go after him. At one stage I did get out of the van and sheepishly crept towards the dance hall. But in that pitch darkness I was met with two awful black eyes as something stumbled from behind the dance hall, from out of the frosty darkness. It staggered towards me, clumsily tripped on a rock patch of ground and fell awkwardly on top of me, knocking the both of us to the cold, frost-laden concrete, where we landed with a hard thump. The man stank like something awful, and I saw a pale, pasty old face looking down at me. A drunk man, his mouth glued together with sickly froth, who had been supping outside from his whiskey bottle to sum up the courage to dance with the fair ladies inside, was my first thought. He was ossified now, and could hardly move, his rotten breath mumbling incomprehensible gibberish. But he had two black hollow eyes like Pat described. The sight terrified me to the bone. Though I tried to free myself, it was like being buried under a truckload of wet, rotten muck. But someone else emerged from the darkness. A young girl. I could hardly see her. But under the pale moonlight, her green eyes were haunted. I thought her the most beautiful specimen I had ever seen. After a mighty struggle, she pulled the old man from me and he rolled over moaning and groaning before he struggled to his feet and staggered away. The little girl looked at me apologetically, as if she was responsible for this poor lost soul. Shaking from the ordeal, I shyly thanked her, ran back to the van, locking the rusty old doors, grabbing the holy medal my poor mother, God rest her soul, had given me just before she died. I prayed furiously. The whole episode had left me shivering and my heart now beat feverishly. I couldn't help feeling I'd be marked for life, for I felt as if I'd peered right into the eyes of the dead. The following night, Uncle Ned gathered all the family around the dinner table and we drank some tea. His once neat black hair was now all unkempt and he had that far removed look in his eyes as if he was gazing at events in another realm entirely. But there was that gentle kindness too. A very decent old soul was to be seen in those sad eyes. Children, I have some news to tell you. We all put down our hot mugs of tea and looked at Uncle Ned, for there was an awful quiver in his voice. Children, promise me one thing. Promise me if anything was ever to happen, your Uncle Ned. Promise me you'll always stick together, that if you ever get separated or lost, that you'd walk the length and breadth of Ireland to find each other again. Nothing was said for a while, until my brother broke the silence. We promise, said Pat. Is everything okay, Uncle Ned? The Lime Burners want me to be their regular sax player. They say I'm the right man for the job. He wiped the tears from his eyes as he told us this. Why are you so sad about it, Uncle Ned? Asked Fionnuala. Uncle Ned did not answer. But my brother Pat and I knew the reason Uncle Ned was so sad. We imagined that the Lime Burners had put the same demands on Uncle Ned as they had put on the rest of the members of their sodden old band. Unfortunately, there was only one requirement for being the right man for the job, and it wasn't necessarily to do with musical ability, as good as Uncle Ned was. It was no surprise when the priest called our house the following evening and told us there had been an accident, but not to worry. We'd be well looked after. I like to think Uncle Ned is in heaven now, for if anyone deserved their eternal reward, he did. But I cannot help thinking that he's playing in limbo with a very average show band called Johnny and the Lime Burners. If you were ever travelling from Granlahan to Clonfad, you might even come across the Starlight Ballroom. The Lime Burners are a regular feature on a Friday night. You'll see a van parked outside on which their name is emblazoned in fiery orange letters. It boasts a wee dent. The ballroom shines for miles around, and inside a line of lonely old women sit on one side and a line of lonely old men on the other side. And to those faded old floorboards they arrive like clockwork every Friday night to shake their creaky old trotters. for in the dance hall of the damned, their dancing days will never end.